Atkinson's works are valuable shorthand guidebooks which facilitate the development and strengthening of the soul following the Vom Maj or left-hand path. How to Develop Psychic Telepathy, Your Mind and How to Use It, A Manual of Practical Psychology, Practical Mental Influence are useful works the reader may consult. New Thought culminated in Atkinson and its value is minimal outside of his works as far as the reader can understand. New Thought had its roots in Transcendentalism and Christian Science, an occult variant of Christianism which is largely pantheistic naturalism as critiqued in René Guénon's book The Spiritist Fallacy. In spite of his critique, however, what he called Spiritism or mediumistic may have some value, though most of its claims to communion with spirits were orchestrated in fake events, such as in the case of the United States and the Fox Sisters. Other variants of the Illuminists are found in the Rosicrucian Cosmo conception by Max Heindel, a Danish émigré who set up a center in California and wrote various works such as The Astrological The Message of the Stars, which is a fair synopsis of basic astrology, Occult Principles of Health and Healing, a work prescribing a low animal protein vegetarian diet, and the Rosicrucian Cosmo Conception, a work which he plagiarized from William Walker Atkinson and amplified upon, as well as transforming Atkinson's Luciferian conception into a Jehovistic Christian one. His works prescribed a typical Illuminist lifestyle and worldview, only with a Christian twist, and much of them are biased in favor of this Jehovistic Christian slant, though still purporting to be Luciferian. Still other Kabbalists from this time are Dion Fortune, who wrote The Cosmic Doctrine and Psychic Self-Defense, which are classics in Kabbalah, and A.E. Waite, a Christian Kabbalist well critiqued by Guénon in the latter's Symbols of Sacred Science as a mere occult pretender. In conclusion, the Kabbalism of the turn of the last century outside of Masonry, Theosophy and more racialist Ariosophical and Arminist works comprise a similar strain of Hebrew Christian Luciferianism, and all prescribed and adhere to a similar doctrine and Weltanschauung, only with subtle variations on the theme. Much can be derived from these works, though the errors they contain can present significant stumbling blocks and blinds, and can be simply dangerous alleys to venture down, especially as regards their ceremonial magic and the entities with whom these occultists interact. For a basic understanding of Illuminism, these works are representative samples and contain useful practical advice in terms of the fabric of reality, how to control and manipulate it, and how to augment one's power and direct one's thought force in the proper way, i.e. to empower oneself and to harm one's enemies. Crowley and Thelema, one of the more popular representatives of occultism in the pejorative sense employed by René Guénon, is Aleister Crowley. Undoubtedly, Crowley was an adept of some variety, and given his affiliation with Hebrew Kabbalah and contemporary Jewish Kabbalists such as MacGregor Mathers and Israel Regardi, and that he was at one time MI6 agent for the British government, is reasonable to conclude that his adeptitude was in no way beneficial for the white race, but rather served Jewry and their agenda. Crowley had a few negative things to say regarding Jewry, which are contained in the work Illuminati Racial Doctrine. He was a product of the times, i.e. a person who existed during the time before the mental scourge of political correctness, and thus reflected a more healthy-minded conceptualization of racial realities. Regardless of this fact, Crowley was steeped in the black magic of Jewish Hebrew occultism. What can be definitively understood is that Hebrew as a language has been utilized by Jewry for a long time, and that is bound up with the scriptural stories of the Tanakh as well as their Talmud, and thus is a medium of foreign thought forms that are tied in with the entities with whom Jewry works, and who Crowley, it may reasonably be concluded, also worked. Indeed, Crowley's workings with these entities almost certainly precipitated his downfall, becoming possessed by them and undergoing problems which manifested in the physical as above so below, precipitating his death. Regardless of his autobiography, his ideology of Thelema has some points of value to offer. 1. The notion of doing one's true will, and this if need be against all normative restrictions imposed upon one from without. 2. His conception of a political system being one of a solar phallic cult run by initiatic priest kings, a totalitarian state of philosopher kings in the sense of Plato, with 3, a religion based upon the method of sacred science. Our method is science, our aim is religion, are some of these points in its favor. The writer would agree with these broad points but would oppose the specifically Judaic form of their manifestation, which, if taken to their logical conclusion, would create the very Zion government Jewry would seek to install, perhaps not in the form of a rabbinate but in that of an occult theocracy in which they would play the role of the de facto rulership. The true will means one's proper destiny being worked toward through the appropriate means, according to its proper nature, and this harmoniously attunes to the sum total of being. This is the meaning of love is the law, i.e. the harmony of existence. The corollary statement love under will means this harmonious attunement to the divine on the part of the individual doing their true will, attuning their will with that of the divine, creating the least amount of inharmony and the most amount of harmony in all of their thoughts, emotions and actions, with the intention of manifesting this harmony as widely as possible, not putting aside one's ego but developing the ego and personality such that the lower personality is attuned to the true self. The normative restrictions of the society in which one lives, insofar as they do not harmonize with the true will of the individual, are thereby revealed in their problematic character as, given that an individual soul has incarnated on the earth by the law of attraction under certain conditions, therefore if the true will of the individual is not accommodated by the currently extant laws, these laws eo ipsa reveal their flawed nature and or the individual has been insufficiently accommodated thereby. The laws must therefore be adapted to accommodate the individual, but only insofar as the true will of the individual is concerned, not their feelings and transient personality alone. This may mean that the individual incarnated on the earth to give battle to the society from within, for example, and that he may suffer the guillotine or the noose as his fate. Be that as it may, his true will is manifested and accommodated by the society. This is not liberalism nor Christianism with its pathos for the victim, but rather a realistic and coldly dispassionate solar Olympian conception of political praxis and social life. The individual and the society are mutually supportive entities. The society is comprised of individuals, but the individuals are subordinated to the society, and society accommodates their true will, enabling just elevation and limiting and inhibiting unjust elevation, such that the society attunes itself to the divine will and thereby constitutes a just or harmonious order. The hierarchy of such a society Crowley prescribes to be structured as a Brahmanical caste system of elites. So far so good. This accords with the tradition of Atlantis and its priest kings, and is also intended to be a solar phallic system of religion and social life, and a cult theocracy by definition. This the writer agrees with and would look upon as the proper social system by which society should be organized in order to attain and maintain a universal order. Though Crowley's practice of his true will may have been correct, he having had to manifest his ideas through the vehicle of the currently extant initiatic orders and their particular forms, i.e., Hebrew Kabbalah, and having been saturated with Jews, especially given that Crowley was a member of the British Empire, means that Crowley's true will was not by today's standards picture perfect, but was simply a necessary fact of that time and place. Politically, Crowley applauded the fascists and travelled to Italy during the time of their regime, and also prescribed that swastikas be mass-produced on teacups and other items. He was a fan of the totalitarian systems of hierarchical order, and not of the Christian but of a primordial Atlantean tradition and pagan traditions, and yet being British and under the influence of British egomania and its Christian and Masonic moralism, served as an agent against the Third Reich. He thus did his true will in undermining the last chance for Aryan mankind, as did his fellow British servants of the Empire of Zion and its Jewish controllers. He contacted at an earlier period in his history an entity called Iwas, and transcribed this entity's messages in the Book of the Law, to usher in the Aeon of Horus, critiquing the monotheistic religions and prescribing his own version. His own The Law is for All, an extended commentary on the Book of the Law, amplifies his Weltanschauung. He later contacted the grey alien-looking entity called Lam, and thus could be said to be affiliated with ETs, who might very well in all likelihood be affiliated with Jewry and their reptilian Elohim. This the writer can't say definitively, and like all British people he constituted a schizophrenic personality, not entirely pro-white or pro-Jewish but a protean figure whose loyalties are to all appearances always divided and yet ultimately self-serving. The British posit themselves as objective and above petty particularism, but manifest the converse in their imperialistic expansionism, usually gone about in a covert way. Philemu in broad outline is a largely subscribable ideology through its particular Hebrew and Illuminist elements are suspicious. Ideas can be borrowed from it, and indeed no choice is available, as we are living in a world governed on its principles at this time, at least they're being manifested, however gradually and imperfectly, into being. Should they ever get a chance to become fully operational through the contemporary dialectic of the Illuminists, the world may very well indeed be a new golden age sans Abrahamic religion. Theosophy during the term of the 16th century and heading into the 17th prior to the time of the French Revolution, occultism in the sense of Jewish and Kabbalistic variants increased in spread as a backlash against the decrepitude of the Catholic Church, whose walls had become increasingly fissured through the earlier Renaissance backlash against its hegemony and with the rise of Protestantism. The occult revival came on strong against the hegemony of the church and spawned all manner of orders and organizations as power sources through which independence from the monolithic institution of Catholicism was enabled. The presence of modern Freemasonry crystallized into manifestation as of this time and will be discussed in a later section. In tandem with this, and at a slight remove from its advent as a distinct and identifiable international presence, the various ideas of Theosophy and other forms of what purported to be the secret doctrine came on the scene. Largely these were Luciferian currents which established themselves as opponents of the Catholic Church and indeed of Christianity itself, save in some cases which used Christian motifs and themes to more effectively propound their new and allegedly perennial doctrine of the ages. The writer's compilation of quotes from the fin de siècle period occultists, those who came on the scene during the turn of the last century, illustrates through a racialist lens the various ideas and doctrines of those Luciferians and what their end goal is, namely the erasure of the white race and their supplantation with a mixture of diverse kinds, whether ruled over explicitly or at all by jury or no. Each and all of the Illuminists in the above handbook were, and their followers today are, individualists in a sense of Richard Coudenhove von Kalergi. They advocate and seek to establish a one-world government of race-mixed individuals, each having no distinct or historically extant heritage or organic culture, a mere mongrelized hodgepodge of anything and everything that can bear the label human. They are all on board and indeed were instrumental in the formation of what René Guénon called the progressivist fallacy, as well as the fallacies of eclecticism and spiritism, which he also critiqued and spoke of in two of his works, and which Julius Evola also critiqued and spoke of in his work The Mask and Face of Contemporary Spiritualism. Hence the roots of individualism and progressivism lie in the doctrines and conceptions of Illuminati, and therefore must be examined and understood in their proper light as means of understanding this agenda, which ultimately culminates in the work of Richard Coudenhove von Kalergi and his practical idealism, the hatred of the impure for the pure and the fanatical desire on the part of the impure and they who have had their minds polluted thereby to destroy purity in the name of the typical set of high-flown terms and phrases: equality, peace, love, humanity, progress, et al. Theosophy is the most significant form of what many would identify as New Ageism and what René Guénon contemptuously labeled Theosophism. He thereby attempted to imply that Theosophy, which claims to be a certain contemporary form of the secret doctrine of the Hyperborean tradition, is not legitimate or authentic and thus a mere imitation and syncretic invention of its creators. In his work Theosophy, Invention of a Pseudo-Religion, he makes aspersions against Theosophy and its founders Helena Petrovna Blavatsky and its later representatives such as C.W. Leadbeater in an ad hominem fashion. He attempts to refute Theosophy and its secret doctrine on the basis of slanderous insinuations which are irrelevant to the substance of the ideology itself, and hence his work is more of a stereotypically French gossip column than anything. Evola's attempted critique of Theosophy, though more relevant, simply denies the reality of its claims without adequately refuting them, simply treating of them in a dismissive manner. He addresses the theosophical notion of karma and reincarnation in his article of the same name, which analyzes the notion of karma and the real facts of reincarnation and how the theosophical notion is false, at least according to himself. Where the Theosophy's conceptions as empirically presented by Blavatsky in The Secret Doctrine are entirely true or only a partial truth, the writer will contend that there is a fair amount of truth in at least the original doctrine of Theosophy as penned by Blavatsky. According to a contemporary Indian ship's captain, Arjit Vardakil, Blavatsky and Colonel Olcott, her affiliate who originally presented Theosophy, were financed by the Rothschilds to create this secret doctrine and to serve the agenda of Jewry, corrupting the Hindu doctrine in its original form. This claim is made by an anti-white racist whose credentials, however, are limited to the capacity of a ship's captain and not, as far as the writer understands, an adept, and thus must be taken with a grain of salt. However, given the nature of the secret doctrine, it is an admissible claim in that the Kalergi plan is a particular microcosmal form of the general Jewish plan for the genocide of the white race, and that Theosophy's claims to progressive evolution of the soul entail the formation of the sixth subrace of the fifth root race, that being a synthesis, the sum total of all races or species of bipedal anthropoidal beings currently extant on Earth. A claim to the inevitable mixture of all into a unitary race called the sixth root race. Indeed, this fits very well into the schemes of Jewry for their mongrelization protocol, the claim that all such beings on Earth are Aryans, and thus it is perfectly fine, indeed inevitable, in the name of the evolution of the soul for all to be mixed together into this progressive amalgam. Blavatsky spoke of how this was forming in North America at the time of her writing, and indeed the current demographics testified to the reification of this idea, the idea of the Eurasian of Richard Kuddenhove von Kalergi. This process of the melting pot of the cloaca gentium and is not so much an inevitable fact of history, but rather a cunning plan formulated by Jewry to manifest this idea. On this basis, it seems a reasonable inference to assume the Blavatsky's formation of this progressivist idea of soul evolution was simply a sophisticated and elaborate piece of propaganda to deceive and convince upper-class whites, especially those of the aristocracy of the British and budding American empires, to facilitate the realization of this idea, i.e. to make the Kalergi plan a reality, mixing their race by slow degrees out of existence and enabling Jewry to rule to ever greater degrees as the progressive development of history carried forth in his juggernautical inevitabilism. The secret doctrine of Blavatsky propounds the notion that mankind had an origin through some lengthy process of evolution, with higher entities coming on the earth and the anthropoids being mixed with them. Insofar it seems a credible conception of the history of the world, as does its fairly exhaustive exposition of Gnostic conceptions of metaphysical principles that comprise the secret doctrine, the ancient archetypes and sacred wisdom of the ages being fairly well synopsized, referenced and articulated in both the first and second volumes of the two-volume work. That Blavatsky was highly critical of both Darwinian evolutionary theory and the creationism of Christianity, especially of Catholicism, are agreeable perspectives for those who understand the Jewish roots of both, and that, in the case of Darwinian evolutionary theory, there has never been discovered a missing link between man and ape. In the case of Christian creationism, the magical creation of everything out of nothing begs the question as to how anything could serve as the original cause of the creation, and how a differentiated order could manifest from chaos, everything allegedly deriving from Jehovah Yahweh. Why these beings are distinct in concrete form, and why this distinctness is looked upon by Christians as if it were a negligible or insignificant matter. Christian creationism is a patent falsehood, as the will to power of the demiurge is simply an eruption in the primordial chaos of a lower vibration that generated a crystallization of the pre-existent forms and created entropy and time amidst the realm of Eternia. Thus, to venerate time with its generation and corruption, its entropy, is to venerate death and extinction, not immortal life, making of Christianity and monotheism in general a death cult. Within the work by Blavatsky, Isis unveiled the Catholic Church and Darwinism are both subject to a thorough critique, and the writer would claim a refutation of their respective doctrines, both of which are false and both of which are played off against one another dialectically, Jewry forcing people on either side of the divide as means of dividing and conquering their host population, especially that of the Aryan race, atheistic materialists versus theistic creationists. Blavatsky's conception is at least a partial truth. However, her evolutionist and progressivist conception is difficult to affirm to be true. The rounds and chains wherein souls reincarnate and, learning various lessons within the context of the Great Plan, as Alice Bailey, a later theosophist and a staunch of Blavatsky's work, would call it, and then eventually reincarnating on different planets according to a rigid schema of evolution, each soul following a certain predetermined path toward progressively higher forms of evolution, all seem a product of a rich imagination. Such a wooden schema appears as characterized by Julia Savolo as a cartoonish and artificial conception of reality. Such an ideology was not a presence in the ancient Vedic tradition, where the soul did not reincarnate but either ascended to heaven or went to hell, to the second death and the lake of fire. Accordingly, this conception of Blavatsky casts suspicion on her work and theosophy as a whole, the general scheme and template of which is a prescription for mongrelization and is therefore serviceable to the plans of Jewry. Further evidence that Jewry subscribes to and desires theosophy lies in the fact of the successor to Blavatsky, Annie Besant, who was a Jew herself. Besant seems to have revealed her reptilian features in these photos. Additionally, she attempted to convolute Blavatsky's original secret doctrine by writing an additional volume and attributing it to Blavatsky. Perhaps Blavatsky was a genuine occultist of good faith, but was either used or confused or both by the financial elite to formulate the secret doctrine in New York City, the center of B'nai B'rith Jewish Freemasonry in the late 1800s. Blavatsky was critical of Jews in her work and referred to the Judeo-Christian and Masonic hierarchy of elites as black magicians. With this, the writer will concur and thus draws the provisional but by no means definitive conclusion that Blavatsky was sincere. Perhaps she was confused on some points, and that the later distorto of theosophy such as Besant and the Christian Alice A. Bailey were conscripted to sabotage her work and modify it to serve the world order's agenda, making it the de facto religion of the United Nations, created and controlled of course by international Jewry. Alice Bailey also had her criticisms of Jewry, especially in her work The Destiny of Nations, which prescribed the inevitable destiny of the currently existent races on the earth, claiming that Freemasonry would be divested of its Jewish elements, both she and her husband Foster Bailey being Masons. Perhaps this is a good sign of the dispossession of Jewry from their position of absolute power as of that time, and that Masonry is not a purely Jewish control mechanism, a Judaism for Gentiles. Theosophy does has its value, though to all appearances works toward the goal of a mongrelized world. Rudolf Steiner, an Austrian theosophist, created a variant of theosophy called Anthroposophy, which prescribed a dualistic conception of life based upon figures which he presumably affirmed to be actually existent beings, or Muzd and Ahriman, derived from the Mazdan religion of Zoroaster. His work is quasi-Christian with an emphasis on individualism and was supportive of Freemasonry, Steiner having connections to Aleister Crowley and others. He was eventually made to disappear during the time of the Third Reich, as his work was deemed to be subversive, and he, having had contact with high-level Masons, undoubtedly played a subversive role, his individualistic orientation being inadequately folkish for the Third Reich. He established a form of organic gardening and a certain form of education called the Waldorf School, which oriented around a sub-personal mediumistic interrelation with the Elementwesen. His work was and is today a sort of pantheistic naturalism oriented around the evolution of the individual. He has made some criticisms of Jewry, saying that there is no place in the modern world for the spirit of Judaism, and claimed that whites will play an instrumental role in creating a unified race, with whites being in a leadership capacity. What this means specifically the writer is not sure, and his quotes can be derived from the compilation Illuminati Racial Doctrine. How an individual could develop themselves authentically without or independent of an organic collective, i.e., a culture organism, in the words of Yockey, that delimits the parameters of their self-development, granting them opportunities to develop themselves within certain conditions conducing to an authentic and harmonious development, is a question. Steiner's individualism is what led to the current malaise of modernity, the crisis of European nihilism, and the possessive individualism based upon the universalist abstractions of mankind and humanity, which has created so much chaos up to the time of this writing. The writer can only conclude with respect to Steiner's doctrine that Hitler was right in suppressing Steiner's doctrine as well as suppressing Steiner, as no man is an island entire unto himself. Satanism. Satanism has become a bugbear or bogeyman that the Christian clergy utilize as a means of fear-mongering their slave minions or flock, steering them away from investigating reality or developing themselves into a higher being than that of one of the sheeple or cattle of the Zion slave society. Satan is an anglicization of the Hebrew word shaitan, which means adversary. It is not an actual man or distinct organism, spirit or being, but merely a word or concept designating that which is an adversary. It being a Hebrew word is simply the perspective of a Jew labeling another being or object what is an adversary to themselves and to their deity, which they call Yahweh, Jehovah. According to Jewry, whoever does not bow before their personal deity and by extension to themselves is an adversary or shaitan. Hence calling someone or something satanic simply means that that thing is designated an adversary, and this of Jewry and their deity Jehovah Yahweh. Naive and foolish people who operate in a state of knee-jerk reactionary consciousness based upon the way in which society has programmed them utilize this language and employ their terms and concepts to understand and relate to reality. However, in doing so they demonstrate their folly, as Jews are the real adversary of all, not an adversary of themselves or their own deity. To use Jewish words to describe or explain reality does not perform any task but to serve Jewry and to tie oneself into the thought forms. Hence any who are legitimate and effective adversaries of Jewry would be well advised to avoid the usage of this term to describe them, as this is Jewry's own property and so can't apply to themselves, as they are servants of their deity, not adversaries thereto. Their deity, presumably the Demiurge and his legions of angelic hosts, are not good or venerable beings, but instead the converse, bad and contemptible rogues, just as are their created slave minions, Jewry. People in modern society have had their minds so corrupted and polluted by the thought forms of Jewry that they are incapable in the majority of cases of thinking independently of their programming. Accordingly, this brief sketch of Satanism, or what has been called such and in some cases calls itself such, is not for the profane goyim but for those capable of independent rational thought and possessed of a higher intuitive faculty through which they may guide themselves in better understanding the ideology of Satanism. Many of those who are labeled by such as bigoted and narrow-minded Christians as Satanists or satanic are in fact simply non-Christian, as most of their many-minded half-wits deem all of their who are not biblical literalists as satans or satanic. Hence all of the knowledge available to they who have eyes to see escapes they who insist upon leaving the scales on their own eyes, and who would seek to blind all others not self, and indeed burn to death all unbelievers. Hence it must be borne in mind that of all of they deemed satanists, satans, satanic by this bigoted group, most all are simply people seeking truth and justice and to live life without undue restriction or control of their will. Satanism as an ideology began around the time of Anton Zandelavay, a Jewish circus performer who drew upon various ideas from Friedrich Nietzsche and Ragnar Redbeard's Mike is Right, and added a gimmicky aesthetic that pandered to the 60s era baby boomers and their devil may care mentality. It was an ideology somewhat derivative of a distorted thelema, with the true will transposed into a thonic sensualism, with self-indulgence being the modus operandi. LaVey, being a Jew, may very well have been staging SOP to drive the Christian flock into the church as part of the dialectical process of good versus evil that Christians and Jews involve themselves in, with Christians playing the good side, putting a stop to the evil perpetrated by Jewry, and this at the expense of the lives of all. Hence LaVey was not to be taken seriously in his pantomime, but his ulterior motive should be understood as more typical Jewish manipulation. Granted, Jews as a collective participate in black magic and are properly spoken of as black magicians, but their magic has little to do with Levian Satanism and is derived from the religion of syncretism and assimilation of others into themselves, rendering the pure, good, true impure, bad and false. Michael Aquino in his Temple of Set is another example of this pantomime and theatricality with real consequences. Concealing themselves behind the facade of humor and theater, they perpetrate atrocities which have now become notorious. Even around the time of their commission they were made notorious, and this deliberately by the Cabal as a means of fear-mongering their slaves into embracing a slave religion and not thinking for themselves, living in a state of fear-based reactive-mindedness as means of trapping them in lower density states of consciousness. Under this condition, they then vampirize their soul energy and perpetuate their own control and empowerment as well as the entities with whom they work. During this time period post-World War II, the movie industry was generating their propaganda films related to occultism and Satanism. This had been going on throughout the entire Piscean Age under the Catholic Church and possibly even before this time as a priestly caste mechanism of mind control imposed upon their subjects to keep them scraping and bowing before their priests. Movies such as Hollywood Babylon by the Duke Anythanger illustrate this process, as well as Scorpio Rising and Lucifer Rising, both of which presumably entailed actual sacrifice. Rosemary's Baby, which incorporated LaVey in it and which was allegedly financed by the Catholic Church, also entailed the ritual sacrifice. Hence the notion of Satanism was inculcated into the consciousness of the masses and entrained them to live their mundane lives in fear and trembling, serving Jewry's agenda of keeping the slaves in a state of ignorance. In conjunction with various false flag operations continually staged during this time, the theater of the real featured a satanic theme that served to damp down the consciousness of the relatively affluent and comfortable flock of baby boomer sheep. The culture of Satanism was dawning as of this time, with Hollywood and literature producing an endless glut of ghouls and ghosts, fifth year porn, the Christian masses, and to usher in the new eon of Horus. The theorists or ideologues of a more serious variety of Satanism came out during the time of LaVey, playing the role of the ivory tower intellectual in relation to the privy wall of LaVey's cartoonish Satanism. Kenneth Grant, an English occultist, brought forth a variety of Satanism which could only be spoken of as thonic black magic of the negroidal variety, analyzing such subjects as African voodoo and arcane sects of the Vomamage of India with its sex and death focus. Uniting Eros and Thantos, Grant wove together a spider's web of witchcraft with rites such as the consumption of menstruum and other sexual perversities as a means, presumably, of breaking the mold of bourgeois moralism and immanentizing the eschaton of the Aquarian Age, going beyond good and evil with The Magical Revival, the name of one of his introductory works. Aleister Crowley and the Hidden God was yet another of his historical overviews he penned, presenting to the profane the history of the Obeah and the Wangu and its relationship as a thonic lunar occult current through the ages, culminating in the work of the Great Beast 666, Aleister Crowley. Grant's works are an interesting look into the darkness of lunar black magic and the Dionysian ecstasies of the Vomamage in its lowest octave of negroidal voodoo rhythm, and presented in a neologistic style appropriate to the old and yet new terrorism of the Mother Goddess. The transcendent solar Uranian modality of consciousness is not so much the outcome of following the practices of Grant as an immersion in the menstruum of the Mother Goddess, a plunge into the night side of Eden in a characteristically primitive and instinctive-minded way. Perhaps these challenges of Grant's adversarial practices conditioned his soul to transcend the limitations of the human, all too human, and to ascend to some higher dimension. This the writer can't say. He can only say that the black magic practices of Grant are reminiscent of the Jews and their practices, and perhaps prior to this point those of the Lemurian beastmen of the now sunken continent of Lemuria, aka Pan, the location and origin of all pantheism and the womb of the Mother Goddess cultus. Later incarnations of Satanism flirted with what Jewry had concocted as the ultimate taboo, namely Satanism, attempts being made to weld together the light of National Socialism with the darkness of Satanism, or adversariality in the Lavean or sinister abyssal numinous sense of the Order of Nine Angles and the former Catholic priest David Myatt, its founder. Myatt, a probable MI6 agent affiliated with the British government, played his role in the theatre of the real and concocted the Weltanschauung of Nazi Satanism, which consisted of a naturalistic pantheism and veneration of nature and alleged deities subsumed within the rubric of Satanism. Myatt's concoction centered around this potpourri of communion with nature and hinting at human sacrifice and other aggressive and violent activity of an insurgent nature claiming to do so out of a necessity for the preservation of the folk. The late 70s and through the 80s were the heyday of Myatt, who transmuted himself into all shapes and sizes of character, pretending to be involving himself in insight roles, eventually becoming a Muslim and drawing in the public mind a connection between himself as a representative of Nazi Satanism and jihadists serving the cabal in its vilification of pro-whites by the creation of this false association. Eventually Myatt changed colors again as the typical Catholic chameleon he is and disavowed racism or extremism in pompous and moralizing tones in his later works, claiming, "I suppose I will always be a Catholic," returning to his Catholic mythos from that of the sinister numinous Parthii mythos of veneration of nature and the Greek philosophy of the Heraclitean variety. The pathos and mysticism of Myatt is characteristic of Catholics with their emotionalism and emotionally tempestuous nature. The Order of Nine Angles later transformed into an even more violent and aggressive associate organization, initially started by Myatt through his Aryan Army conception or trope, whereby anyone who wore an insignia of the Aryan Army contrived by Myatt could undergo terrorist activity and claim his act was done in the name of the Aryan Army. As if this weren't bad enough, in giving white people a black eye, the O9A metamorphosed yet further into a greater monster of white terrorism with the Temple of Blood and the sensationalistic allegations surrounding it related to human sacrifice, etc. Such juvenile pageantry went unperceived for what it is in truth and inserted itself into the mass consciousness, further justifying the Jewish occupation government in their imposing their tyranny upon the broad masses in the name of fighting against hate, when in reality fighting against whites. Another figure of the O9A and another alleged ex-Catholic priest from Ghent, Belgium named Hager came on the scene in more recent years, revivifying the stagnant O9A after David Myatt had taken a leave of absence in his insight role as a jihadist. Hager introduced various magical techniques and ideas such as psychic vampirism and was depicted in women's clothes in various photo ops, creating another association between pro-whites and the Luciferian androgyne in the worst sense of a Jewish black magic cursing of the Gentiles, associating healthy-minded National Socialist ideas with low-minded transvestism. The Order of Nine Angles was to some extent replicated during the same time by James Mason and his siege culture. He had alleged affiliation with Charles Manson, the CIA asset who played a role in the murder of a Jewish movie director's wife and child as a member of the Manson family, and whose connection to the movie director Roman Polanski manifested in the film Rosemary's Baby, which also had connections to Anton LaVey. Siege culture ramped up into high gear when the cabal wanted to represent their satanic Nazi sip during a lull in the white terrorism sip that had petered out to a degree during the mid-2010s. Thus it metamorphosed in a manner similar to Myatt's O9A into a greater monster, that of Atomwaffen, another cartoonish faux-terrorist organization whose members were either government agents or patsies. Though the O9A had some interesting insight to offer, as did the work Siege, in granting the reader critical insight into the pro-white political movement and what the cabal has in store for whites through their creation of false associations between pro-whites and terrorism, these movements and their mandates and modus operandi are undoubtedly contrivances of the cabal itself. Though they are cabal operations and their members were or later became or returned to Christianity with rare exceptions, their adversariality served the Judeo-Christian cabal and constitutes a proper form of adversariality or Satanism against white survival. Yet another representation of the false association between pro-whites and Satanism, the satanic Nazi sip, was undergone by Tom Metzger, who founded WAR and who has been a lifetime actor in the pro-white movement. On his show Race and Reason, he interviewed two alleged Satanist Boyd Rice and Nicholas Schreck, the son of Anton LaVey. The latter was putting forth the facade of being a violent neo-Nazi Satanist who advocated mass murder and claimed the Holy Hoax was a legitimate real event, and this just after the trial of Fred Leuchter and Ernst Zundel occurred, perhaps being introduced to discredit their exposure of the fraud of the Holy Hoax and incur sympathy for the victims of an event that never occurred save in a hyperreal virtual reality of mass media mind control and its live-action role-play of the organized Jewish community and their Christian minions. Just shortly after this point, Stephen Flowers came on the scene touting himself as a PhD scholar who wanted to deracinate the Arminist and Nordicist works of Jörg Lanz von Liebenfels, Guido von Liszt and Siegfried Adolf Kummer, with his selective bias in his translations of their works. Flowers is an affiliate of the Temple of Set and Michael Aquino and was discovered involving himself in all manner of perversions in his occult activity. That the temple of Set was in no way Nordicist or Nordic reveals the inauthenticity of Flower's path through the weeds of the mire as one of the lords of the left-hand path, a title of one of his works wherein he attempted to draw a false association between Nordicism and Satanism. Flowers also attempted to represent Zoroastrianism, the original form of dualistic good versus evil Magian morality so well critiqued by Nietzsche in his The Genealogy of Morals and Beyond Good and Evil. Flowers' disciple Alfred Avery has taken over this project of Flowers in recent years. Simultaneously, Flowers translated the work of the Christian Kabbalist Purchue, an affiliate of Aleister Crowley, which purported to reveal the connection between the Edo and the coming age of Christ, thereby creating a false association between Christianity and Nordicism. The writer had been in contact with Flowers in attempting to have Flowers translate Jorglanz von Liebenfels' Ostara magazine, which had informed Hitler in his early years and received at first the hollow mockery of the Lord of the Left-Hand Path Flowers regarding von Liebenfels' work, but, given that money was involved, Flowers made an offer to delegate the translation work to his translators for $250 per page of 1,000 pages total. At around this time, another alleged Nordicist, Thomas Carlson, came out with a more or less Nordicized Jewish system of Kabbalah, further creating the connection between pro-whites and Nordicism specifically and Satanism. Michael W. Ford, a self-proclaimed Luciferianism, came out around the late 2000s with his work Maxim Hull, based upon a representation or broad interpretation of the Babylonian and Sumerian mythos, carrying forward Crowley's intention to revive the Sumerian tradition. His works would be called satanic by many, though Ford himself utilizes the term Luciferian to describe his project. His The Bible of the Adversary is a gargantuan tome that encapsulates his work, which is largely centered around building power and this through left-hand path techniques of consciousness elevation and working with deific masks or archetypes in the way in which this was done in the ancient world. Ford's archetypes and deific masks are psychologistic, if this is the proper term, relate to subpersonal forces and are not so much oriented toward transcendence but ectonic Dionysianism. He has expressed in one of his videos his praise of the state of Israel as a Luciferian state owing to the adversarial nature of Jewry in their opposition to the Arabs. On this point, he is indeed correct in characterizing Jewry as of an adversarial nature, adversarial to all but themselves. Ford continues to write his works and put forth his particular slant on Luciferianism today. Lastly, within the realm of Satanism and the pro-white movement is Joy of Satan Ministries. This organization, which exists, as far as a writer is aware, entirely online as a network or associate organization, puts forth the curriculum of black magic and self-development to facilitate the spiritual empowerment of the individual and to come to an understanding of how to utilize occult forces for this purpose and to attack the enemy, the Jew, via black magic. As the writer has discussed in The Black Magician, the Jew's magical fire must be countered with the fire of the black flame, and thus pro-whites should be willing and able to practice such techniques in order to effectively combat the enemy in the occult war the enemy utilizes to destroy them. Failure to understand the mechanics of magic is to render oneself on the pawn in the game of Jewry, and thus one must, as a matter of life or death, acquaint oneself with the causality of magic, i.e. the utilization of occult forces. Joy of Satan Ministries offers such an understanding in their works, such as their six-month program and other more specific articles which reveal the how-to of practical magic. They had a certain ritual called the Reverse Torah Ritual, which purports to negate or cancel out the cursings and black magic of Jewry by vibrating the Hebrew letters 9 times each, pronouncing them in reverse. Whether this is actually effective or no, the writer can't say for certain, but may be worth investigating by they who desire to build power for themselves and their race and to effectively subjugate the despots of the world. In conclusion, though Satanism has been put forth by various Jews in explicit and cartoonish form in order to fear-porn Christians into their churches and to set up a boogeyman upon whom all of their own sins can be placed, the term Shaitan simply means adversary in Hebrew and is a term used by Jewry to vilify all of they who Jewry hates and opposes, deeming them adversaries or Satans of themselves. The bogeyman should not be allowed to continue to exert its fear porn influence upon the stupid and must not deter they who seek power and strength from following the left-hand path. To be or become an adversary of jury and their god, far from being bad or evil, is in reality good and is indeed an imperative at this time. Venture forth then along the left-hand path toward glory and power. Freemasonry has become notorious in recent years and seems to have served as a scapegoat for the V-Jewish overlords to project their karma upon and to shift attention toward others and away from themselves as the highest echelon of power in the great work for global enslavement. Masonry thus served as a screen behind which the wizards of Zion concealed themselves the better to operate the levers and gears of their slave machine. Masons are Kabbalists, presumably in the sense of Jewish black magic, and their initiatic creed is for the most part the Lunar-Semitic occultism of the Near East and Mediterranean region, a syncretic mixture of various secret teachings of all ages that are assimilated into a system of initiatic gnosis whose rites and symbolism have been and probably still are Hebrew and come in the form of architectural metaphor. Their writings and teachings are coded language with layers of interpretation similar to the Talmud, and like most all initiatic orders, the information being restricted to the initiates and shielded from the eyes of they who are deemed by them profane. The system of initiation is based upon adhering to rites and rituals. The initiate progresses through obtaining ever more degrees of light reflected in the conference of degrees and their correspondent duties, rites and rituals. The higher up one goes, the more light one is claimed to possess through the mechanics of ritualism, which activates his potential occult power and renders him a light bearer or Lucifer, oftentimes being granted the capacity to confer similar initiations on others deemed worthy. Masonry operates on the basis of symbolism, and its symbolical philosophy communicates meaning via the higher intuition of the initiate who is immersed in the rites and rituals and experiences changes at a soul level, empowering himself and serving the great work which is transforming the world into a totalitarian system of control, a Masonic despotism under the initiatic priest kings. Such are the general and typically implied claims of Masonry, which are conveyed to the profane in typically implicit forms of communication, hinting and elusive conveyance of being by symbol, number and color, and in general the implementation of the sacred sciences. Masonry has been critiqued heavily as aforesaid, especially in recent years, and this especially by those who appear its foremost enemy, namely Catholics and the Catholic Church, both ex cathedra and via its unofficial representatives who share in its values. Protestants have also thrown their hat in the ring and have taken their potshots at Masonry, putting it in the crosshairs as the foremost target of their anger. Perhaps, in spite of this apparent animosity, at least in the case of the Protestants, many of their ranks were and are to this day Masons, at least in terms of the clergy and brethren of the Church, with Masonry simply being a higher level of the Judeo-Christian Masonic hierarchy, what the writer would call the Demiurgic hierarchy or the MORG. The latter so called by David Myatt of the Order of Nine Angles. At the highest levels of Protestantism, Masonry reigns supreme and is put forth perhaps by its lodge members as a bogeyman with which to scare the laity to keep them penned in the sheep's pen and paying the costs of the priest caste via taxes and tithings. The shepherds or priests of the Order of Melchizedek who attempt to shepherd the flock are themselves the wolves in sheep's clothing who shear and slaughter their fatted charges while pretending to lead them to the promised land. The Catholic critiques of Masonry began in earnest in the 19th century with Grand Orient Freemasonry Unmasked, Monsignor George Dillon, and later in the works of Emmanuel Malinsky, The Occult War and Vicomte Leon de Ponsat, Freemasonry and Judaism, The Secret Powers Behind Revolution and Judaism and the Vatican, as well as The Kingship of Christ and Organized Naturalism, F.R. Dennis Fahey. These authors and later still Michael A. Hoffman put forth ample evidence to illustrate who these secret powers were and are, though from the necessarily one-sided perspective. The apparent union of Masonry and Judaism, the writer has questioned time and again, and whether this union is necessary or merely a result of historical contingency will be further inquired into in this work. The Protestants such as William Morgan, a former Freemason assassinated by the Cabal for his work Proofs of a Conspiracy and later Secret Societies and Subversive Movements, Nestor Webster, Lady Queensborough cult theocracy and a former member of the OTO in her work Light Bearers of Darkness purport to reveal the nature of the occult, Masonic conspiracy. However, they mainly claim in their works that, 1, such a conspiracy exists, 2, that its foremost representatives are the Illuminist Luciferians and 3, that Illuminism entails possession by lower astral entities, that the adherents falsely believe they are obtaining light when in reality they are mere light bearers of darkness, having the false light, the real light of the world being Christ. This the writer is not qualified to verify either way, not understanding who or what Christ is if in fact anything, and not being an initiate of any Masonic or Luminous order. What he can claim is that URI have to all appearances been bound up with Freemasons in a conspiracy against Catholicism, and that the protocols of the Elders of Zion speak of Masonry as a mechanism of keeping control of the Goyim. Whether Masonry was originally Jewish or no, the writer again cannot definitively say, but conjectures it was originally Aryan and traces itself back to the Atlantean tradition which René Guénon had alluded to in his book Studies in Freemasonry and the Companionage. That Masonry moreover is the only currently extant legitimate tradition in the sense of a legitimate system of initiatic gnosis. Catholicism appears to have been co-opted and corrupted by Masonry beginning perhaps in the 19th century, though further evidence of such corruptions are spoken of in the Catholic work The Plot Against the Church by Maurice P. Nye. However, there may be and perhaps have always been splinter factions within Masonry, or at the least rogue Masons who attempted to transmute Masonry into its original a form of Atlantean Gnosis and take it away from the Judaized version which had been profaned, as David Lane spoke of, for political ends. That Catholicism accommodated Jewry throughout its history and that most popes were Jews suggest that Catholics might be in collusion with Jewry and making Masonry a scapegoat for their own chicanery. The trek of the Jew through the ages being accompanied, as illustrated in the cartoon Pogo, in the characters of the Mole and Deacon, the latter Catholic accompanying the Jew's bloody trek with their own cloven hooves. This the writer is not qualified to say one way or the other. Figures such as Mozart and Hermann Hesse had been Masons, the former according to Miguel Serrano in Adolf Hitler, the last avatar having been assassinated at the age of 27 for attempting to reveal in his opera The Magic Flute the secret doctrine of the primordial Atlantean tradition which Serrano so well represents in his works. Hesse in his books Steppenwolf and Demian presents the initiatic process, but it appears somewhat distorted and brought to a lower level of what Evola would call the subpersonal or the emotional lower levels of being, bound up with a Dionysian ecstaticism so characteristically Jewish in its mode of consciousness, a far cry from the solar Uranian form of consciousness specific to the Aryan and reflective of the Apollonian mode of consciousness of the Ur tradition, that which is transcendent and not subject to aleatory states of consciousness. Other breakaway Masons, they who parted ways with the Jewish spirit of Dionysianism and its Near Eastern lunar rites, can be seen in German occultists of the fin de siècle who nevertheless were still bound up with the Jewish form of modern Masonry to a degree. Later, during the Aryan revival in Germany and Austria, more Aryanized forms of initiation were developed, which led to the rise of Hitler and the backlash against Masonry, which replicated itself in other nationalist and folkish movements globally. Examples are the Hungarian Narrow Cross Party of Ferenc Szalasi and the rare work on Masonry by Adolf Jánbach, say The Crimes of Freemasonry, and its having been banned by Mussolini in Italy as well. The work of General Erich von Ludendorff, Destruction of Freemasonry through Revelation of Its Secrets, and that of Dieter Schwartz, Freemasonry attempted to reveal the secrets of Masonry and its internationalism. Not much, however, in particular details was revealed, and a critique of Masonry from an exoteric and political perspective alone was put forth, leaving the reader without much of a basis for understanding Masonry both in its modern and archaic form. The movie Occult Forces by the assassinated Jean-Marie Rivière encapsulates this idea, that Masonry is Judaism for Gentiles and that it is a sinister cult bent on Jewish dominion over the earth. This perspective may however be only the bias of a Catholic or of a sectarian nationalist, though at least in Masonry's modern form it appears a valid criticism. Later, the theosophist Alice A. Bailey, an alleged Christian, spoke of Masonry as becoming divested of its Jewish elements as a project of the Great White Brotherhood of Adepts. Bailey was a distorter of Blavatsky's secret doctrine, introducing the notion of the Christ ray, which parallels the messianic eschatology of the second coming of Christ and ties one into the thought forms of Christianity. Bailey may very well have been a Vatican operative. Masonry's principal figure is Hiram Arbeef, the initiate or entered apprentice, and he is a representation of the imperfect ashlar or rough stone that requires shaping through the initiatic process. The Masonic initiation process places the actual candidate for the order in the role of Hiram Arbeef as he undergoes the great work which purports to make good men better. Masonry is based on a theme of the craft or the builders and is a metaphor which many contend derived from operative masonry with the medieval stonecutters' guilds who constructed the cathedrals.